What's up, witches? Welcome to season 3 of the Better Witch Podcast, presented by the Beyond Bronx Witch YouTube channel. I'm your host, Allie Kravitz. I'm a tarot reader, Reiki master, and owner of Bronx Witch Headquarters, a spiritual shop and workshare space in the Bronx, New York. And this season, I will be coming to you every week with a new topic and a new guest co-host to share our real life experiences as practicing witches. Because when we know better, we witch better. Today's guest co-host is Corey Thomas Hutchison, a folklorist and a magical practitioner currently living in the Upland South. He has spent more than a decade as the co-host and author of the New World Witchery podcast and website, amassing hundreds of episodes and articles on North American folk magic and witchcraft. He has a doctorate in American studies from Penn State with specializations in folklore, ethnography, and religious studies. He is the author of New World Witchery, A Trove of North American Folk Magic. And his latest book, Llewellyn's Complete Book of North American Folk Magic, was released in April 2023. You can learn more about Corey at newworldwitchery.com. This episode is sponsored by Llewellyn. Explore nearly 500 samples of folk magic, stories, artifacts, rituals, and beliefs. One of the most comprehensive collections of witchcraft and folk magic ever written, New World Witchery shows you how to integrate folk traditions into your life and deepen your understanding of magic. Folklore expert Corey Thomas Hutchison guides you to the crossroads of folk magic where you'll learn about different practices and try them for yourself. Plus, save 20% off now on New World Witchery at Llewellyn.com when you use the code NEWWORLD24. Coupon valid through April 30th, 2024. Not valid in conjunction with other discounts or previously placed orders. Note that you do need to be logged into your Llewellyn.com account for the coupon to apply. And many of our viewers are actually members of the Bronx Witch HQ Coven community, and they participate in our book club. And we had the pleasure of reading New World Witchery. I have my copy right here. A Trove of North American Folk Magic earlier this summer, and it was definitely a hit, very well received. And so I think folks feel like they know a little bit about you, a little bit about your background, your credentials, your extensive experience with both folklore and folk magic from a research and academic perspective, but also in your own practice. But what they may not know, and what I realized I didn't know and really wanted to know, was, why folk magic? You have dedicated a lot of your writing, a lot of your credentials, speak of folklore or folk magic. But what was it about this area of study and this area of the craft that made you dedicate so much of your life and so much of your work to it?
I think it was just that that's where it started off in childhood. I was always fascinated by the fairy tales and the folk tales and the little, I don't want to just say superstitions because that feels like it's writing it off a little bit, but the, see a pen and pick it up or see a penny, pick it up. Those little things that you kind of grow up with. And then it's also one of those things that, I grew up with a lot of various kinds of folk magic around me, but I didn't recognize that it was there. I didn't recognize that folk magic was there until I actually went overseas and lived for a year and taught in Prague for a year and saw kind of the folk culture there. And it's like, it's really wonderful. And then I came back and I was like, I have been, it's sort of one of the situations where when you visit somewhere else and you sort of exoticize the someone else's culture thing, which is a problematic thing to do, I think, in some ways, but we all do it. We all do the thing where something new sort of surprises us. And then you turn that reflective lens back on yourself and you spend some time kind of focusing on your own kind of experiences and culture. And you wind up finding like, there is a whole lot of this material that has been around me all my life that I've, been a part of, but that nobody seems to be really talking extensively about, because a lot of witchcraft, I think, and a lot of magical study, the ceremonial side of it gets a lot of attention, which I think it deserves. And I think there's definitely a religious component that gets a lot of attention, which again, it deserves. I think that there's a lot to be said for that. But the folk side of it, the stuff that people have been using every day for hundreds or thousands of years, and has informed kind of the magical worldview of generations of people. It's always been sort of piecemeal. There's been little bits and pieces of it floating around for you to learn about, but there hasn't been an effort to sort of really take that on and study it as its own thing as much. I think in the past 10 to 15 years, that's shifted. And I've been very happy to see that. But up to the point where like I first started getting interested in this, I was like, why is, I grew up in the South. There's so much folklore all around. Like you can't walk down the street without there being like seven ghosts that have been on that street somewhere along the line.
Facts.
Right. And I mean, you're there in New York, right? New York is a plethora of folk cultures that all kind of overlap and combine and do these really interesting things. You showed me the coffee cup earlier, right? That coffee cup is its own little piece of New York folk culture, right? And that's the thing, is like there's so much of it around us, but sometimes we can get blinded to that. We can sort of miss it because it's so common to us, but there's power in it. There's some really wonderful sort of magic in that, if we'll just kind of take it seriously and pay attention to it, but also have fun with it. I think that's important too, so.
Yeah, well, I really like that you mentioned the ceremonial aspect, because that's actually a point that I was going to make, which is for me, coming into the craft in the late 90s and early 2000s, ceremonial magic was like all the rage, We had lots of examples on television, and if you had any concept of a practitioner, you were most likely going to draw up images of someone in a robe, perhaps using, consecrated, maybe very expensive looking altar tools, and casting circles and going through formal initiations and coven structures and things like that. So I definitely really kind of fell victim to that, I think, at the start of my craft, because I really dismissed folk magic as being like not legitimate enough, because the mainstream images and a lot of the written material really focused on more ceremonial magic, on revamping ancient grimoires and codified texts that tend to be a lot more formal and things like that. And so it took me a while in my own practice to come, I would say, back to folk magic. And so I'm really grateful and excited that you are writing on this topic and putting out material that allows those of us who maybe like approach the craft in kind of like a studious way and would appreciate some formality or some structure around what they are learning, having that type of an approach applied to folk practices. And I guess that probably comes from your academic background or approaching things in this way. But for me as a student of the craft, I really appreciate that, because while folk magic is, I would say, really accessible in a lot of ways, because it often includes the materials that are right around you, the plants of your region, the tools in your kitchen, it's kind of inaccessible in a sense that a lot of the holders of that knowledge are not necessarily writing books or having their practices put onto paper or codified in some way. And so it's really helpful, I think, the materials that you are creating for the community in particular. And I am also really excited to see folk magic get this kind of treatment, so that folks who are interested but maybe don't have a guide or someone that they can go to, can still get some reliable information on what some of the folklore in their region is and some of the magic that might be associated with that folklore.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm curious with yours, like you started off kind of on that ceremonial side and kind of approaching it from that side. Have you found that you've been able to kind of blend both folk and ceremonial in your own practice pretty easily?
Yeah, I would say so. I would say that I often find that, like, if we're going to look at any particular moment in my magical day, whether it's a ritual or perhaps even an actual spell, I feel like I kind of find myself going towards one side or the other, in the sense that, like, there are certain workings. For example, my family is African American and they're from Charleston, and So there may be workings that I do that are really connected to the folklore and the folk spirits of that space. And when I'm in that space, it doesn't feel quite so right to include like elements of ceremonial magic because they just don't feel energetically like they fit. But in terms of like my, I don't know, I guess just like the box around my craft, I would say yes, for sure. If you were to look at my altar or look at my magical space, you would see both elements. You know, you would see a consecrated athame, but you would like also see like a rusty nail and like, you know, rubber band, you know? So like in terms of the whole approach, yeah, they really do kind of after a while, I think, most witches, I was talking about this with Madame Pamita, who you might know, and we were talking about eclectic witchcraft and like what that means and all of that. And she made a point that really stuck with me, which is, you know, aren't we all really sort of eclectic witches in the sense that we don't really have a lot of fundamentalist practitioners, right? We tend to take on the things that we learn about and the things that we are connected to, whether it's culturally or through education or communities that we find ourselves in. And so everyone's individual practice becomes kind of this blend that is unique to them. And it includes all of these different elements of what they've experienced. So I think at this point, that's what's happened to me, where my practice is very much my own. And it pulls on both of those, you know, points of exposure that I have.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, I think that point about sort of eclecticism is really, really good that, you know, and that's one of the things I actually kind of love about witchcraft and witchcraft community is that we all learn from each other. That's kind of one of the best parts of it is that we can learn these things from each other and we can exchange information and hopefully we can do so in a way that's respectful as well. But, you know, that's been a really wonderful thing. So I was just kind of curious with that, like where the ceremonial and the folk overlap. So I love hearing that from your perspective.
Yeah, and I think that for a lot of people, it is nice to know. I'd like to think, as witches who are maybe, you know, exploring new things, to know that, yeah, I can learn about these kind of two different approaches, and neither one is, like, better than the other. And I think that's an important point, and I would love for you to speak to that, because one of the things that I think took me a while to, like one of the reasons why it maybe took a while for me to open up to folk magic and learn more was this kind of like reputation that it had of being like low magic. And in fact, some people will refer to it as low magic and ceremonial magic as high magic and kind of put this like value stamp on it. And so for a long time, it didn't seem, I don't know, but it just didn't seem like there was enough there for it to be like a valid way of practicing. And now I find myself really loving it because it speaks a lot more to like my everyday life and how I operate, and also to like my cultures and the backgrounds that I am familiar with. Like I said, my family being from South Carolina and things like that. Not a lot of ceremonial magic going on amongst my ancestors, right? So, you know, but there was tons of folk magic. So for me now, it's like this beautiful, amazing thing. And just like by accident, my practice is very folk-y. But it took a while for me to get there because there was this blockage that I had that somehow folk magic was just like not good enough or not serious enough or something like that. And in your own walk, or perhaps maybe in the conversations you've had with other witches, guiding other witches into the world of folk magic, have you found that that's the case? Do people still have that perception, you know, that folk magic has this reputation of being like the lower form of magic?
I mean, I think that you're absolutely right, that has long been a dichotomy that people have sort of forced on these things. Mm-hmm. And I think originally a lot of people who were making the distinction between high and low magic, either one, were coming from pretty elitist backgrounds. These are, you know, the kind of rich British dudes who, you know, were, you know, forming secrets.
Found some grimoires and were like,
right, like These are for just us now.
This is our thing now.
Right. It's our secret club. You can't, no girls allowed kind of thing. Pamela Coleman Smith, you can come and illustrate for us, you know. So like there's that kind of like, you know, elitism that's kind of rooted in there. But then I think, you know, once you get to the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, and some of the sort of more contemporary occult stuff, the dichotomy between these two is really just to distinguish between whether you were working from a sort of ritualist, ceremonialist perspective on sort of the evolution of the higher self, the sort of personal alchemy components of ceremonial magic, versus what they were calling low magic. And I think a lot of people didn't intend for that to be a slur, even though it kind of was. But it, you know, basically it was saying like, oh, well, the low magic is used to sort of deal with things like, I got a parking ticket and I need to get out of it, right? Or I'm running behind on rent. How do I get some money for this? And so ceremonial magic was like, well, if you just, you know, evolve yourself high enough, then you can kind of manifest that in this other way. But low magic is like, look, you can't focus on all of this. You can't do a, you know, 6 months long Abramelin ceremony if you can't pay your rent for 6 months. So let's work on that first. And so it's just kind of two different ways of approaching those levels. And I do think that now, one of the things I think is really funny is that in the past 10, 15, 20 years, there's definitely this kind of perspective that like, that folk magic is, you know, low magic because it's, you know, it's kind of the dirt under your nails, gritty, you know, playing it, like you said, you know, it's like nails from, you know, like iron nails, rusted iron nails and stuff like that. And so it's got that reputation, but that's kind of like its sex appeal in some ways, is that it's a little dirty, it's a little funky. And so I think that there's been a little bit of a shift in attitude towards that in the past couple of decades, which has been really nice.
I see that too. And definitely in my own practice that has showed up, because, you know, folk magic did go from this thing that I was sort of like, grandma's cup of tea. Okay. You know, but like, I want to know like how to turn lead into gold, you know, so like, let's do that. But lately I've been really embracing how sexy folk magic really is, and how much I enjoy that dirt under the nails sensation. And I love that you mentioned that, because specifically that was something that I had a hang up about. Early in my practice, you would have seen very neat little herb jars. And if I was working on something and let's say I got oil on my hands, well, I would need to clean that off before I would touch my lovely labels and, you know, all of that stuff. And now it's like, hands are covered in stuff, and then I smear it all over everything, and my altar's an absolute mess by the time I'm done, and like maybe I cleaned it off right away, maybe I get to it in a couple of days, and there is something about that actually feels really good. It feels good, I think, in two ways. It feels good just sort of like viscerally as a person to not have to be so worried about like the formalities or the buttoned up parts of things. To just kind of let yourself go and allow yourself to really, you know, feel the energy, because that's what we're doing. Like, what I tell witches who are stepping into this, you know, don't do what I did, which was to get really caught up on all the stuff and the neatness of the things and the right thing in the right place. And did I do this step of the ritual and then this step of the ritual? Because when you're focused on that stuff, not always, but there's a really good chance that you might be missing the opportunity to really connect with the energy that you're trying to move and manipulate in the first place. And so that desire to be so buttoned up might actually be hindering the potency of your magic in some ways. And now I'm really just like loving the feeling of like letting go and getting into it and knocking something over, and realizing that I needed to knock it over because I was being crazy and needed way more of this particular ingredient or what have you. And spirit's just kind of leading me and the energy's leading me. And that is something that I am glad that I learned and like, you know, come to understand. But it also feels good in the sense that like, when you develop your own practice, you know, you hear folks say like there are no rules in witchcraft. And I often hesitate to reiterate that statement because I do think it gets very much misunderstood. And then people sort of think that you can do whatever you want. And maybe you can, but maybe you shouldn't. So I hesitate to be like, there are no rules. But in your own practice, there are no rules, right? Like, you can choose to follow certain steps and things like that, but you kind of get to decide for yourself how you cast your magic. Because at the end of the day, it's just got to work and it's got to produce results. And so if it works for you and it produces results, then that's really the most important thing. And I think that folk magic allows you to feel that maybe more readily than ceremonial magic, just because you do have that, or you don't have that element of the formality and the rigid ritual steps. So you really do get to say, okay, what do I want to do here? Do I want to do 2 pinches of lavender? Mm-hmm. I think I need the whole damn, you know? Folk magic really lends itself. And so it's become really sexy for me for those two reasons. So for folks out there who are interested in folk magic, that's something to consider.
Yeah, actually, you said something in there that I think is really interesting about this, you know, we're hesitant to say this thing about there's no rules in witchcraft, because there are, you know, there are definitely ways in which witchcraft is always incredibly flexible. And the way I would kind of think it is, there's not necessarily rules in witchcraft. There are relationships. There are relationships with the spirits. There are relationships with the ingredients. There are relationships with, you know, the spiritual world at large, right? And like you said, when you're working with certain things, you can kind of feel those things, that relationship building with that herb that you're kind of rubbing together to put on the candle and stuff like that. And I think it's interesting, like we're talking about ceremonial magic, a lot of ceremonial magic, you're dealing with these really powerful gods, angels, kind of like very powerful, impressive beings. And it's like walking into, you know, a lawyer's office or a, you know, a CEO's office or something like that. And you're going to be asking for a favor. Well, you might get that favor, but you're going to want to dress to impress. There's a lot of like gatekeeping and stuff to get to that point. Folk magic is much more like, you form these relationships with people that, you know, you meet, you have a beer with them around a campfire, right? And then the next week they're going to help you move because they have a pickup truck, right?
Oh, that's love this analogy you were stringing for having.
Yeah, it's the relationship, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Just,
oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I think, which is, are y'all taking notes? Because that's excellent. I don't know if that's in one of the books, but it should be. Part three. I think that's amazing. That really, God, I never thought about it that way. It being relationships, but also like, I feel like you just really hit the nail on the head in terms of explaining what the difference in the vibe is. Mm-hmm. You know, it's job interview at the corporate space versus be around the campfire. And in both situations, you are developing a relationship with another being, entity, whatever it may be, and knowing that there are maybe some things that you're going to want from them, there are some things that they're going to want from you, and understanding the vibe of the two different spaces will definitely, I think, help people better understand not only kind of how to navigate that, but also which is right for them, right? So, like, some folks would really, like, not feel comfortable with the campfire beer with somebody. They would prefer to have a more, mm-hmm. I use the word formal exchange or something like that. So
yeah, there's nothing wrong with either approach. Both are valid, right? But sometimes, and like, if you try to bring too much formalism into that, like sitting around the campfire with a six pack of Natty Light, you know, you try to bring too much formalism into that, they're going to knock you down a peg, right?
Right.
But it's all in good fun too. Like there's, you know, a lot of times people, you know, there's these relationships are built over time, right? And they're relationships that you're developing through these interactions and these exchanges. And some people really want those rules and those structures, which come with like, oh, I know what I have to do a formal job interview. I know what I have to wear. I know that I have to have this resume. And you can think about like a job. I love the job interview as actually an analogy, this like, mm-hmm. you know, the thing you have to bring, what's your offering? My offering is my piece of paper with my name on it, right?
Yes.
Like there's a very serious like structure to that. Whereas, you know, that informal, like, hey, you know what? I really need, can anybody like loan me $20 to help cover my rent this month? You asked 5 or 6 of your friends, they can all chip in, right? Because you built this relationship over time, right? Or if you're like, I'm going to be, like I said, moving next Saturday or something like that. Does anybody have a pickup truck? Oh yeah, I can spot you that, right? Like those are the kind of relationships you're building that are on that informal level. And I think folk magic really approaches that informal, but deep. They're very deep relationships, right? There are relationships that you form and keep over time. And I think that's really, really important, is that folk magic is really about those relationships. I think all magic really is about relationships. Mm-hmm. it's just, like you said, a different vibe, a different energy to how you interact. And folk magic is much more, what do you need right now? What can I help you with right now? What is our immediate relationship? And sometimes folk magic is just recognizing spirits and spending time with them. It's like a lot of ancestor connection, right? Mm-hmm. It's a lot of just making sure that you're putting the coffee on the altar, right? Or making sure they have some fresh flowers every week or something like that. Because you just want to have that relationship built up. You're not asking for anything right now. You're just trying to develop a connection, because that's where folk magic is going to come from, is those deep connections. So, yeah, I think there is a different vibe to that.
Did this analogy just occur to you?
Today, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it happened here, live.
You heard it first, folks, okay? Right here, because get ready. You guys are going to get sick of me repeating that and constantly crediting for you. And if I don't, make sure you jump in the comments and be like, "Oh, I said that." Because that right there, like, wow, God, I love this podcast. I learned so much. I learned so much from these chats. It is amazing because, you know, I started my journey at 12 years old, late 90s, and I'm 37 now. It's been a long road, and it's been a mostly self-taught road, especially up until recently, which has been, there's a lot of beauty in that, but good God, guys, just get teachers like Corey, because you can speed the process up so much. And that is something I think I'm going to carry with me forever, because I think that is such a great way to look at the difference. Like, if you need to move and you need somebody with a pickup truck, like, you're probably not going to go to the guy that you have the job interview with, right? Like, you might go to that person for a better position to be able to afford your own pickup truck, if that's the, mm-hmm. the route that you want to go down. But if you need somebody to just pick you up today and help you carry your stuff, then that's probably not the right energy to be working with. That's probably not the right request to make over there. And it probably wouldn't be very well received or turn out quite the way you needed it to be. Whereas perhaps over here, you have a different relationship, as you say, with spirits that would be a lot more amenable to that type of intent or goal that you have. And so I encourage all of the listeners and viewers to really make a note of that and take that with you, because I think that would be really informative to you guys. It's going to be informative to me just in making the decision of, like, who am I calling on to help me with this, or what should my approach be, especially for those of you who write your own spells or create your own rituals. That I think can be a really helpful guiding starting point, right? Like, am I going for a job interview here, or do I need to have like a fireside chat for some stuff? And that can be really, really guiding. So thank you so much for that. That's huge.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, I think that's something where, like, you know, we have a lot, like we talked about eclecticism. A lot of people do work with multiple deities, gods, goddesses, you know, spirits and things like that. And it really can come down to, like, what relationship are you trying to establish? Like, if this is your first time working with, I don't know, Oshun, right? If you've never worked with Oshun before, you probably want to start off on something maybe a little more formal, so that you can sort of say, this is who I am. I would like to get to know you better. And so maybe the ceremonial structure is going to work better for that. But if you've been raised working with Oshun, then you know very well, like, oh, here's what I'm going to go throw on your altar right now. I need something. Can you please help me? And, you know, in that situation, you've got that relationship established. And that's, you know, folk communities are like that. We have a lot of people think of folk magic as like it's just one thing. But the thing is that we're all part of multiple folk communities, right? Like you talked about the fact that you have kind of this family history from Charleston, South Carolina, right? That is its own folk community. But you also live in New York, which is its own folk community. You live in the Bronx, which is its own folk community, right? Mm-hmm. Each of those is going to carry its different kind of folk traditions and folk weights and stuff like that. And you can belong to multiple ones at once, but each of those relationships is going to be a little different. So you're going to know, you know, if you want to find like the best Greek food in the Bronx, you know where to go, right? But that might not be the best Greek food in New York, right?
Right.
You're like, no, it definitely is.
Don't say that out loud. They were right.
Right. But like, that's the thing. It's like you learn these things by being a member of different folk communities and seeing their overlap and their, and you yourself are the overlap, right? You are a crossroads you are a very specific kind of crossroads of a lot of different folk communities, which means that you have a lot of magical potential within you. You just have to recognize what your communities are and where this is coming from. Or at least that's how I found. I don't know if that's been your experience or not, but.
No, I would definitely agree. Don't get mad at me if you see me put that on a t-shirt. I am the crossroads. Because, yeah, that's deep. Look, you said, you're like, oh, that's good.
But you said it so much better.
Teamwork. Teamwork makes the dream work, right?
Teamwork makes the dream work.
Yeah. Yeah, no, because that's deep, but also like so real, so accurate. And I love that you mentioned that, because we do have this question of cultural appropriation. It's like the ooh, the bad word. You know, I always like hesitate before I say it. It's like, oh, we're going down this road again. But it's an important topic. I think it always has to be kind of touched on, just to make sure that we're all being respectful of each other and whatever it is that we're doing and things like that. And I do think that it can be easy for us to lose sight that we are the crossroads of all of the different cultures that we touch, whether it's a bloodline connection to a culture, or a regional connection because of where you live, a connection through the land, perhaps it's a connection through your employment, right? There's a culture of the police force if you're in law enforcement, mm-hmm. There's a culture of public school teachers. There's a folk community essentially around all of these little bubbles of life that we navigate, and we are where they all intersect. And I think that's an important point to make, because there is a little, in some ways, we've kind of gone in the maybe not in the other direction, but we're sort of going there where I feel like when I first started, no one gave a damn about cultural appropriation. Way too many people were just like, that's for me. I made it. I'm going to write a book about it. You know, and now there's almost a hypersensitivity, which is perhaps a good thing, at least for the moment, as we kind of check ourselves and maybe correct the mistakes of our past. But there's a bit of a hypersensitivity around not doing the wrong thing or encroaching on someone else's practice. And something that I tell folks who come here to the shop, students of mine, when they have those concerns, is to remember that a lot of these things live within each of us. It isn't just automatically appropriative to learn or even experiment with practicing things from these folk communities and cultures that you touch. It's kind of not up to other people to say how much you have to touch those things in order for it to be legitimate, for it to be you, right? So like, if you live in Charleston, I don't feel like I get to say, well, you weren't born here. So the folk practices of this land are not for you, or you have no access to them. You are living in it. You are living in this space. You are connecting with the people. You are walking through these streets. You are very much immersing yourself into this space. And so if you're wondering like what gives you the permission to learn about these things, you do. You're learning about yourself, really. You're learning about the different parts of yourself. That being said, I do think it is important to be respectful. So I wanted to ask you about that, because you mentioned something really great in your book. You make this analogy in New World Witchery about the magpie. And the feather and the idea that it is okay to learn about other practices, like in the analogies, like, you know, mimicking the call of other birds or grabbing the feathers of other birds. But it's also important to admit that, like, you are a magpie with a blue jay's feather in your mouth. Like, that just because you learned how to do the blue jay's call, or you've got a couple feathers that you can wear, does not mean that you are now a blue jay and that right. You get to tell other birds that they can't be blue jays, or you get to set the rules for what it means to be a blue jay. So I think that's an important thing to always remember, but allow yourself to explore and learn these, learn about the folklore of these different communities that you touch in some way, because if you touch them, then you are just learning a little bit more about yourself. and learning more about yourself. Know thyself is at the core, I think, of what being a witch is. A witch knows themselves, I would say, at the very, even if you never cast a spell, I would say, if you feel like you understand what you are and who you are, you're witching in the world.
Mm-hmm. Right, so, because you're bringing that kind of that attitude of change with will, right? Like it's that your personal your sort of personal will within the world, you know, is able to help change the world around you, hopefully for the better. Hopefully for the better for you. Ideally for the better for everybody, right? That's kind of what we want. Yeah. And I think that you know, the magpie thing, you know, we all look, you know, I definitely in my experience, in my time, you know, have absolutely appropriated things, and I've been called out for those things when it's been appropriate for that to happen. And it's like you say on the show, when we know better, we witch better, right? That's the important thing. We learn from that experience and then say, you know what, that was not the right thing for me to do. One, I apologize. Yeah. Two, how can I make it better? Three, how do I go forward from here, right? So there's definitely, it's a learning process, and there's definitely things, you know, there's things that I've learned from, I've had some amazing African-American teachers who taught me things like some really amazing like candle dressing techniques, or I had a Muscogee Cree community elder who taught me an interesting piece of folk magic from their community, curanderos that have taught me some interesting things, and all of that I've learned from, I've absorbed it. I'm not going to write about those specific practices because it's not my place to do so. It was wonderful that was shared with me, but I don't have permission to go and share it again. It's that, you know, I'm a magpie with a bluebird feather in my beak, and I'm not going to go and say, well, now as a bluebird, here's what you need to do. Like, that's not appropriate for me to do. So I think that's, like you said, we know better, we witch better. That's kind of what we're trying to do with that. And it's important to be aware of it, but we just try to be better about it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's like the mission of the show. That's the mission of Better Witch. That's why I called it this, because, you know, when I was thinking about putting this together, I was like, what can I add to the world of witchy podcasts? There are so many out there at this point, and, you know, all of that. And I was like, well, you know what? If I were to do this all over again, there are definitely things that I could do a lot better. Appropriation is not something that only one group of people engage in. I too have been appropriative of practices and have made claims that I've had to walk back and realize, oh, I actually really don't have the authority, the knowledge, the education, the permission to speak on these things or to claim to educate anybody on these things, that I've had to walk myself back in things like that. And I think I'm really proud of where the community has gotten, because I feel like we have swung in the other direction, where more often than not, witches are saying, hold on, let's learn about each other's practices, but also be respectful and really open and honest and transparent about what we are, that we are magpies, and that that's okay. And perhaps the next magpie would like to learn a little bit from us, but always being really clear about what it is we actually have experience with. And I think folk magic really lends itself well to that process, because, as you point out, it is so fluid and flexible, and it is very regional. And as much as there are certainly specific folk traditions and communities under the big umbrella of folk magic, what you find, especially when we're looking at the traditions that are maybe all in the same place, like North America, you're going to find that the lines between them are very blurry, because people interact with each other, and we get to know each other, and we marry with each other, and we live together in communities, and we learn from each other. And so those things can blur together. And that's okay to explore that blur, because that blur might exist in you. You might be, like you said, in 3, 4, 5 different folk communities at just by existing, just by the nature of who you are and where you're from and where your life has taken you. And so that's okay. But knowing that there are people who have come before us who know more, have created these practices, and really are the ones that we should be referring to for guidance, I think is important to always keep in mind. And you know, that's another reason why it's so important that we get information from our elders. And so I love how in your books, there's so much referring back to practitioners of the yesterdays of these practices and going back into the, you know, the, what's it, the coffers of information that we can find and kind of, you know, bringing those forward and saying like, hey, you know, let's make sure that we defer to how our ancestors, our predecessors were doing these things so that we are not kind of just sort of taking and piecing together something, you know, for our own, to create our own narrative, that we really are learning and then letting that grow within us and change within us from there.
I think now would be a good time to go and refill the mug from the cauldron and take a little break.
Are you ready to embrace your inner magic and become a better witch? Join the 6-month Better Witch Magic Intensive Coaching Program. Unveil the power of self-realization, meditation, rituals, and more. Elevate your practice with live classes and one-on-one sessions with me, Allie Kravitz. Plus, enjoy exclusive perks, including almost $1,000 in savings on magical products and services, a free 6-month Coven community membership, and a Better Witch Magic Intensive Kit. The next round of coaching sessions begins in September. Don't miss your chance to become a better witch. Learn more now at bronxwitch.com/betterwitchcoaching.
Yeah, I was just going to say, yeah, it makes me think like, you know, we were talking about like the dirt under the nails with the practice, and like sometimes you're getting the dirt under the nails, you're, you know, crushing up those allspice berries and they get under your nails, and or you, you know, get some black salt or some whatever on your nails. It's not just the physical part that's dirty. The learning is dirty too. The learning is messy. The learning is not, it's not clean. It's not just a clean line. Like you're going to run into ancestors that were not great. You're going to run into some practices that are not fantastic, even if, and it's important to look at the past, right? But there, I can think there's a practice from, it's a Southern piece of folk magic that talks about taking a piece of African-American's hair and incorporating it into a charm. And I'm like, that's a no-no. Don't do
that. I'm like, probably going to skip that one.
We have learned and we do better now. We don't do that thing anymore, right? Because you know, it, again, it's messy. It's a messy history. And trying to sanitize it is doing it a disservice. It's doing the people who came from that history a disservice. It's doing us a disservice. So it's fine that it's messy. It's fine that we have to look back and sometimes say, you know what, that practice, it's interesting. And I appreciate knowing that it existed. That is never going to happen in my practice because it is a thing that I feel like violates somebody's consent or will or autonomy or identity. You know, I think that's, it's okay that that part is messy too. So yeah, we're getting into that kind of messy history and I was like, oh yeah, that's it goes a couple different directions there. Sorry, I didn't mean to like
no, please yeah. I like that you know, talk about when we know better, much better. That's our tagline here. One thing that I wanted to ask you, because we do like to help the next witch, but no matter where they are on their journey, it's always good to hear about people's real life experiences, because I think, like I said at the start, I find that I learn like the really powerful lessons that way. So if you were going to restart your journey into folk magic, what would you do better? Are there some things along the way that you maybe would have done differently or avoided altogether that could have made the journey you've taken up until now a little smoother, a little less rocky, or a little better?
That's such a great question. Oh my gosh. That's so good. Yeah. I mean, one, I would definitely try to, I don't know. I wish that we had more emphasis on critical thinking skills at an earlier stage and kind of the learning process just as human beings. But
I was going to say, that's not just a magic thing, my
Lord. Yeah. I mean, but magic can certainly benefit from it, right? You know, to be able to say like, this teacher is throwing up more red flags than a NASCAR race. Like this is, there's something going on here. I'm not thinking this person is the right person to teach me. And possibly not to teach anybody, right? And to be able to kind of discern that stuff better. But I also think that they're, you know, in my case, I've been lucky enough that nothing terrible has happened to me from having occasionally not great teachers. I know for some people that's not true. For some people, they do have terrible things happen to them. So for me, it's been something where I can learn from that. But I wouldn't say that's true for everybody, because I wouldn't wish the terrible things that happen to people, you know, in cases of like sexual assault or things like that. I wouldn't wish that on somebody as a learning experience. That's a terrible, terrible thing. But I do think like having that discernment kind of introduced early on to be able to say like, where is this information coming from? Where are people getting this? And if they can't point to where they're getting this from, this the magpie with the blue jay feather, right? They're not willing to say it came from the blue jay, but if they're willing, if they're saying like, this thing is from me, and you're like, I can tell it's not, like to be able to have that discernment, I think that would be a really big thing for me. I would want to do that and spend some time parsing that out. I think also, and you've mentioned this, spending a lot more time kind of at the feet of elders, spending a lot more time listening, even if I don't always agree with those elders. I think about like when I was a tween and a teen, one of the things that my dad would really get involved with was going and like doing church services and singings at nursing homes and things like that. And part of that would involve kind of sitting and talking to the people who were there, who were oftentimes, you know, in their 70s, 80s, 90s years of age. And I wish I had paid more attention then. It was a wonderful experience, but I just think about all of that knowledge that's there. And yeah, some of it's going to be terrible, but that's where the discernment comes in. But to be able to spend the time with elders, listening to people who have lived a life and can share that life with us, and then to be able to discern kind of what's still valuable to us today and know how to carry that forward and recognize and honor the past too. I think all of that would be a big thing I would shift. It took a long time to get to where it was. So, yeah, so I right. think that might have helped. What would you do? What would you do differently if you were starting this over?
Oh, well, first of all, sitting at the feet of elders for sure would be high up on the list of things that I would do from day one, because I was definitely one of those lonely little, you know, preteen witches just with all of her books in the room by herself. It was a lot of self-learning. And I probably could have just, like you, thankfully nothing terribly tragic resulted from the mishaps that I had along the way. You know, I burned a few things and, you know, things like that, and had a couple of weird spell results, but nothing catastrophic, thank goodness. And, but the journey would have definitely been smoother, I think, if I had availed myself of the older folks that were around me. And the thing is when it comes to that, because I can already feel our listeners being like, well, where do I find elders? Like, what do you mean? You know, because it's not always so easy to just do that. But in my own family, right, like my grandfather passed when he was in his 90s, and he has shown up for me amazingly from the other side. But I wish every day that I spent more time with him when he was here, and that I listened more to, he was not a man of many words, but that I listened more to the things that he had to say. He was a farmer his entire life, and he was farming till he was like 92. He was like out on the tractor at 6 a.m. And he grew okra and watermelon and all of these amazing things that, like, now I can barely keep a plant alive. And I'm like, why? When my mom was like, go out and help your granddaddy in the fields, like, sit in front of the TV. And I was like, no, I'm going to stay here in the AC and watch my Disney Channel. You know, like, I wish I had said, yeah, let me go put on my straw hat and my gloves and go help granddaddy in the field. Because of what I would have learned from those experiences would not anything I learned in the house on the TV or whatever, you know, just strictly out of the water. So I do think if I could do it over again. And the funny thing about that is he wouldn't have been teaching me about folk magic per se. I mean, there may have been some things in there that I would have been like, this is witchcraft. But he certainly wouldn't have used that terminology, and he wouldn't have thought of it that way. And yet I know that that would still have been super useful information. information for my craft and for my practice, whatever it was that he would have shared, whatever wisdom that he would have shared in those moments. And funny enough, my husband had a dream where he was visited by my grandfather, which I said,
"That's cool.
You are blessed," because he hasn't even showed up in my dreams. But and in the dream, my grandfather was teaching him how to build a shed or something like that, out in the field. And my husband was kind of dismissive about it because he's not quite as woo woo as I am. But I was like, "Oh my God, were you taking notes? What did he say? What did you bring anything back with you? What?" And he's like, "I don't know. I didn't really hear anything. It was in a dream. I just remember." And I was like, you know what I mean? But I totally agree with you. I definitely would have made the effort to spend more time with elders, not even looking for magical teachers per se, but just spending more time with those who are older and just that wisdom.
Yeah, and it's important. You made a really interesting point there that I try to kind of point out as often as possible when people are talking about folk magic. If you try to go up to an elder or anybody kind of in any community and you say teach me about magic, teach me about witchcraft, a lot of them are going to be like, no. And also back away, Satan. Right? But if you say, hey, did you have any wedding customs? What did you do when people got married to make sure they're going to have a happy wedding or a happy marriage? Right. Boom. There's a whole thing there, right? Yeah. These periods of either high stress or high celebration in life. That's the stuff to ask about, because that's where you're going to start getting into some of these beliefs and these folk traditions. The gardening with your grandfather would have been a good one, right? Because I'm sure he had specific gardening techniques that were folk traditions that would have been things that you could have distilled. So, all of that's a good thing to look at. I am curious, on the flip side, as somebody who is, you're a YouTuber, you're a podcaster, you're kind of in the media side of things now. We live in the age of witch talk. We live in the age of media-based magic, and folk magic has a place in that. We definitely see a lot of people talking about it. What do you think of kind of the current landscape of witchcraft kind of with this sort of contemporary media, social media space? Is it a good place to learn magic, witchcraft, folk magic for you? How do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, you're in my head and in my notes, because you keep bringing up things that I hate. So I was like, because when I said earlier that, ceremonial magic and Wicca were all the rage back when I started, now I would say what is all the rage is what I call aesthetic magic, aesthetic witchcraft, the craft that is curated for the social media and that is curated to please the spirit of social media that we call the algorithm. The algorithm is...
All hail the algorithm.
They all hail the algorithm, right? A very powerful being it has become. And it's hard to avoid its grasp, so we're all kind of falling under it. I'm not on TikTok. My shop just got on it. I'm not on it. I don't know a lot about the witch talk per se. I obviously know that it's happening. I kind of can't even get too deep into that because I'm like, oh my God, what's happening over here? And also, I just don't understand the TikTok platform. I'm just old enough where I'm I don't get it. So I don't have a lot of exposure with that specifically, but with the social mediaification of the craft, definitely, I've been witnessing right along with everybody else. And, it's a double-edged sword. I was talking about this at the end of season one with Olivia Graves, which is Wonderlust, who has gathered a really big following on YouTube and is definitely someone who creates very aesthetically pleasing things and has learned how to please the algorithm, I think. Probably unintentionally, just she really enjoys making beautiful videos and things, and that's a thing she likes. And so that plays well to the platforms that are visually driven. And we were kind of talking about the upsides and the downsides, and the upside of the craft being so really available on social media is it makes it possible for things like this to happen, for you and I to connect with each other across distance, for practitioners of different traditions to learn more about others and share skills and practices and grow and Definitely, I think the biggest asset that comes from the craft being so prevalent on social media is the community building aspect, because as I have mentioned, I was a very lonely witch. It was just me. I didn't have a lot of folks in my schools, in my workplaces, in my neighborhood that I knew anyway that were interested in the craft the way that I was, the level of seriousness that I was. And so it was a very lonely road for a long time. And it really wasn't until my mid-20s that I started to have like witchy friends, you know, friends that I could really connect with and do ritual with or learn about the craft with. And the internet has, and social media in particular, has been a huge factor in making that possible for me. So I am really grateful for that. But of course, it's a very deep can of worms a lot of times. And so it is really hard to find information that you can really trust. And so you do have to be ready to do a lot more of your own independent learning and independent fact-checking and independent research, I think. In order to navigate the social media space without getting caught up in misinformation or finding yourself being led by teachers that are not qualified or who's are maybe unethical or, you know, things like that. So it's great exposure, but I do think that you need to take everything with a bigger teaspoon of salt as you go through in order to really make sure that you, you know, just are getting information that is not just true or accurate, but that is not harmful to the community as a whole. So, yeah, it's a double-edged sword, I think, is the best way to put it. Because, and for me, I what I try to tell people who come to me and are like, how do I become a better witch? You got to get off the internet. Maybe it's old school of me, but like, you got to at some point put the phone down, put the laptop down and go out into the world and see these things in real life and do the spell, do the ritual, find that plant, find that body of water, go to that community, attend their event, connect with other people. Because if you just stop at consuming what the internet is serving up, I think you're going to find yourself stagnant. After a while, you might get an initial introduction and an initial boost. That sort of, you know, 0 to 50 mark might be great. The internet can help you just find stuff, find products. Where do I buy a candle? Where do I find a shop near me? It's going to help you do that. But then going from 50 to 100, I think, is going to require putting the internet down, realizing that it serves a purpose, but that it's not the whole shebang, and then going out and getting the rest in like real life. Hands-on practice.
Yeah. No, I think that you're dead on that. I think that's very true. Like with the, I hate to say like it's the touch grass approach, because that feels very TikTok to me, but it is that sense of like, you do have to, like, I'm like you, I kind of grew up, not really on TikTok. I, you know, watched them sometimes, but I'm not really on it. I grew up with like MySpace, like I can, my top 8 is kind of where social media. That's my people, right? Yeah. But that's that's the kind of thing where like the media is always changing. The medium is changing pretty frequently as well. And for us, you know, I think when we grew up, like you were saying, like being the person who like sits in the room full of books, the books were kind of like internet at the time too, where it was the way that you learn things. But then you had to go out and practice. You had to find a way to sort of put this into practice. And it's important to remember that what you find in books, what you find on social media, things like that, it is a representation, and it's oftentimes the sort of most polished representation you're going to find. Olivia, like you said, they do amazing, beautifully aesthetic things that are absolutely gorgeous. But there's, sorry, my dog is shaking over there. They're beautiful, they're wonderful to look at, but they are performative, right? Like there's editing involved, there's selective processes in what you actually get to see. And if your practice doesn't look like that, that's fine. It probably shouldn't. It should be pretty messy, in fact. Yeah. It should probably be a practice that shows that you've lived in it, as opposed to a museum piece practice, that you don't want that.
And you know what? You make a really great point, as I think Olivia would agree with this, just from what we talked about, that keep in mind that what you are seeing on the internet is something that has been cleaned up and pretty for your enjoyment, which is not to say that it's not incredibly educational, incredibly informative, really well done, and all of that stuff. But remember that that gloss has been put on it. And so while you may learn from a particular video, if what you do then doesn't look prettied up like that, that's okay, because most likely when Olivia is practicing, it doesn't look that way, right? When they're doing it for the purpose of making this video for you to show you something, then yeah, all you know, everything's in place and in order and everything's all nice and neat and all of that good stuff. But probably when they're like just doing some casting for themselves, it's not like that. And we actually talked about that in the episode where they were like, you know, my full moon ritual, a lot of times, like me in the bathtub with a glass of wine watching some YouTube, right? That's not necessarily going to make it to a video. And all of that good stuff. So just keep that in mind, that what you're seeing on the internet can be very informative. It can be really helpful. But trying to replicate what you see is not really the point. The idea is you want to get the results that that person claims is going to come from this thing that they are showing you. And that really should be the focus. So bear that in mind, that when folks are producing things about the craft for the internet, there is editing involved. There is something involved to kind of make it pretty to please the algorithm god. So you've got to take that and then apply it to your real life. And that's going to probably be messier, as you say, than it looks on the screen.
Yeah, nobody's going to, like, when you're watching somebody do a simmer pot video, right? Like, you're going to see the beautiful simmer pot. You're not going to see them scrubbing the dishes afterwards as they're trying to get the gunk out of there. And, like, if there's one skill you learn as a witch, it's how to get wax out of carpet. But nobody's doing a video on that. So.
I should. All you need is a towel and an iron, guys.
Yes, right? That's it. That's all you got to do.
Yeah. But why do I feel like, I almost want to feel like maybe Silver Raven Wolf.
Oh, sorry, my dog just stepped on his paw.
Oh, no, your paw. Okay.
Yeah, he just got his paw the wrong way. I'm sorry.
How did he hurt it?
We don't know. We've taken him, we've gotten the x-rays and stuff like that. He's a retired racer, and they get these long-term injuries that slowly manifest. So.
Yeah, no, my husband made a joke because he's in his mid-40s. And he said, before the age of 30, when you have an injury, you know how and why. But after 30, you just have, like, injuries. Like, you'll just wake up and you'll be like, my leg hurts. And people are like, oh, what happened? And you're like, I don't know. I'm 30. it just hurts. he's having one of his old man pains. I understand.
May have the wax out of carpet thing. Yeah.
Yes. It might have been because it's funny that you also knew the iron and the towel thing, because I feel like maybe that was something back then where that came in handy whenever I learned it. It was definitely one of my first mistakes, living in my mom's house, trying to practice and hide my altar under the bed in a cloth, was putting my candles away a little too fast and the wax not being cooled. And, having a whole situation on the carpet, which I was able to get up with an iron and a towel before I got in trouble.
Because that's witchcraft.
Exactly. So, and I don't even remember. And what's funny is, I remember trying to clean up the wax. I don't remember what the spell or ritual was that I would have been doing. But that will always stick with me, the horror of being like 13 years old, being like, my mom's going to get up. Oh my gosh, right. She's already not up with the candles, and now I'm spilling wax on her good rug. Like, you got to be kidding.
Gosh, I know. Yeah. No, I love that.
Yeah. So, I could talk to you about this all day. I'm sure the listeners and the viewers could as well. I want to give them an opportunity to ask some questions. There's been a little prompt streaming on the screen, letting them know that they can drop their questions in the Q&A box over on YouTube. So if folks are doing that, I'm going to check that real quick and see if we got any questions there. But if you haven't dropped any questions for myself or Corey about folk magic, now is the time to do so. Feel free to drop your questions after this broadcast into the comments, and I will do my best to answer them for you. And while we are getting ready to wrap up, Corey, can you tell us a little bit about where folks can find you, or if you've got any projects you're working on you want to make sure that we stay tuned for?
Sure. Easiest place to find me is my website, newworldwitchery.com. That's where we have our podcast. We've got over 200 and I think like 250 episodes about North American folk magic. We've been going since 2010.
Goals.
Yeah, like a lot. There's a lot out there. And we have over 200 articles on folk magic as well that are on the website. I think it's like something like 400,000 words worth of material on North American folk magic. Stuff that didn't make it into the book is on there. So there's all kinds of resources there. And there's contact forms and things like that. So you can, if you want to reach out to me, you can reach me through email and all that kind of stuff there. So newworldwitchery.com, the best place to go find our stuff. In terms of stuff coming out, we had the Llewellyn's Complete Book of North American Folk Magic that just came out this year. That one, my name is on it because I'm the editor. What's really great about that is it's actually, we gathered together about 2 dozen practitioners of folk magic, and each of them wrote little sections of the book. So you've got actual practitioners sharing their experiences and their practices in the book. It's not just me talking at you the whole time. So yeah. Highly recommend that. And then my podcasting partner, Lane, and I have a book coming out in hopefully the next month or two called Conjuring the Commonplace, Your Guide to Everyday Enchantment and Junk Drawer Magic, which is basically like we go through a house and look at like, I don't know if anybody grew up with like the grandma that had the butter cookie tin full of like buttons or stuff like
this. Never cookies
in there. So we were like, well, what about all this like junk that's around your house, this domestic stuff? Can we look at that and look at the magical history? So we have like folklore and history of each kind of these domestic objects and the sort of folk magic associated with them. And that should be coming out from Thousand Volt Press here in a couple of months. So that's kind of what's going on. So.
That's exciting. I know everybody's got a junk drawer and there's a lot of magic in there. So I'm very much looking forward to that new release from you guys. That is so, so cool. Thank you so much, Corey. This is incredible. I am just so grateful that you would come and talk to us. I really couldn't think of anybody else that I wanted to speak to our community on the topic of folk magic. You've just done such a great job of compiling this information in an accessible way for us. And you know, the YouTube analytics tell me that like 95% of the people here are in North America. So this is magic that is relevant to all of us. And so to be able to access your writings, access your research and find credible sources of information about this practice is very, very valuable. So thank you so much for putting so much time and energy into compiling all of this for us and taking the care that you have taken to give us accurate, reliable information. It's from a practitioner to another, it's very much appreciated. I feel like I can read your book and go through the bibliography, and I feel really good about what I'm learning. So thank you so much for doing that and for being with us today. Because when we know better, we witch better.
We witch better.
Thank you, witches, for tuning in to this episode of Season 3 of the Better Witch Podcast. Remember, no matter where you're tuning in from, we want to know what you think about today's episode. So make sure to leave us a review wherever you are. A special thank you to our sponsors who made this episode possible. You can support this podcast by grabbing some sweet merch over in the Beyond Bronx Witch merch shop, sponsoring an episode with an ad spot, or following us on Instagram at Better Witch Podcast. Remember, witches, when we know better, we witch better. I'll see you in the next episode. Blessed be.